This is 89.9 WWNO. I'm Janae Pierre, and it's time for All Things New Orleans. On today's show, we'll highlight women's history right here in the Crescent City. Then, Jess Clark chats with an opposer of a proposed gas-fired power plant in New Orleans East. And later, we'll share another episode of The Listening Post. That's all coming up on All Things New Orleans. Stay with us. Today marks the start of Women's History Month. And with that said, the co-founders of NOLA for Women, Florence Andre and Sylvia Fry, join me to discuss women's history right here in New Orleans. Ladies, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Of course. It's the perfect time to have you on. First off, tell us about NOLA for Women and the work your organization does.
NOLA for Women is a nonprofit organization that focuses on the contributions made to the city of New Orleans over the past 300 years by women and girls. And we also spotlight the challenges and the roadblocks that women and girls of New Orleans still encounter in striving to have a successful life here in this city or in this region. We have had community conversations about those issues and are continuing to have programs revolving around access to quality health care and quality education in STEM and economic opportunity for girls and women and the issue of gender-based violence. And those organizations that are involved with that and the individuals in the community are meeting at various times throughout the year. Hopefully, we will be creating an agenda for women and girls and giving it to the new administration by the end of the tricentennial.
And that's Mayor-elect LaToya Cantrell.
Indeed it is.
And as the city celebrates its tricentennial, let's talk about some of the contributions women have made to New Orleans.
Well, you can start from the very beginning of French colonial Louisiana when women have helped to lay the social infrastructure of the city. And I'm thinking, of course, beginning with the Ursuline nuns and their arrival here and establishing the first schools. And following that all the way through the present, women have been extremely active participants in the building not only of the social infrastructure, but the cultural infrastructure of political reform, of a wide variety of areas of economic and social and political life that we don't normally associate with women.
Yeah. I'd like to go to the exhibits that you guys have going on. One in particular is an exhibit on women who have built and rebuilt this city. Let's start with the builders first. Could you tell us a bit about those heroines?
If we start with the builders, and you mentioned this yourself when we were talking about the religious, because the original foundation of the city was laid, I think, in terms of what female contributions were by the Ursuline nuns. But then there were ordinary women, too, who were here almost as soon as men were here. I've seen records of women who ran taverns, for example, in the early 18th century. So they were always present here. But as time went on, they began to build in other ways. And I'm thinking, for example, of all the teachers. And we've had a number of organizations and institutions featuring teachers who built the educational system in this city. Xavier was one of the first builders project that opened. Wow. And it featured women as teachers and as leaders. If you're thinking about, for example, the legal structure in this city, Loyola currently has an exhibition which is open on Janet Marie Riley. Riley was a crusader for women's legal rights. She was instrumental in ending the head and master law in Louisiana, and that's very important. So you can look across the field and you will see women engaged in every aspect. The Jackson Barracks right now has an exhibition on women in the National Guard. So women as nurses, women as doctors, women as teachers, pharmacists, you name it.
So you're basically saying that women, we've done it all. What else is featured in this exhibit on builders and rebuilders?
Well, the New Orleans Public Library is going to be opening an exhibit this spring on women entrepreneurs. In that exhibit, the curators tell me, we will see examples of well-known women like the Baroness de Pontalba, but we're going to hear stories about women that we have not known anything about in the past. For example, Myra Claire Gaines, who was the wealthiest person, not the wealthiest woman, but the wealthiest person in the country. This is extraordinary evidence that they're just turning up about women. And what they're finding is that women were engaged in a lot of regular or traditional occupations like boarders, mm-hmm. school teachers. These are traditional jobs that women were considered extensions of what women did in the home, so they were acceptable. But women were also embalmers. They ran taverns. Mm-hmm. They ran, you name the occupation, and we find women in those occupations.
Okay, so we talked about the builders and rebuilders here in New Orleans, but tell us more about this model NOLA for Women is trying to create around that conversation.
Builders and Rebuilders, we think, is a unique program. We haven't found another like it in the United States. What it does is create a cultural community. When you think about it, it's pretty extraordinary. Almost 40 libraries, archives, museums, community centers are participating in this. The reason they're participating in it is because we want to change attitudes toward women. When you change attitudes toward women, you change behavior toward women. Mm-hmm. Louisiana has one of the highest domestic violence rates in the United States, 49th. We rank 49th in the United States. We need to change attitudes. And by showing the contributions of women, we are rebuilding an attitudinal change.
And you'd say when you have the conversation, you promote that change, correct?
Yes. Right, that's exactly what we're saying. And we think we've created something very unique here. And all credit to the cultural institutions that are participating, that are using their resources to present this side of women's history that is missing.
When you think about local women who have made the city a better place, who comes to mind?
Rosa Keller, for one, for the work she did in civil rights as a well-to-do white woman who did not listen to anyone around her and marched forward to break barriers, invite kids to her swimming pool, involving her children. I really admire the work she did.
Mm-hmm. And what about you, Sylvia?
Ruby Bridges. Ruby was a six-year-old child who integrated the William France School and broke the color barrier in the New Orleans public school system. She's a national and an international icon, and New Orleans should be very proud of her.
That was Florence Andre and Sylvia Fry, founders of NOLA for Women. Thanks for joining me today, and happy Women's History Month.
Thank you. It is a pleasure to be here.
Thanks for having us.
Visit NOLAforWomen.org for information on exhibits and more on women's history. The New Orleans City Council is a week away from making a financial decision on whether Entergy New Orleans will be allowed to build a new gas-fired power plant in New Orleans East. The debate over whether to build the plant has been contentious, especially since Entergy customers in New Orleans will bear the cost in rate hikes. Entergy says the city needs the plant to protect against blackouts, but some say the plant isn't necessary. WWNO's Jess Clark spoke with Logan Burke, executive director of the Alliance for Affordable Energy, which opposes the new plant.
Logan Burke, welcome.
Thank you. It's really great to be here.
Entergy says building this plant in New Orleans East is the quickest way to make sure New Orleans has the power it's going to need as demand for electricity grows. Entergy also says the plant will give the city the option of jumpstarting the power grid in the event of a powerful storm. WWNO asked Entergy to participate in this conversation, but they declined our request. Logan, your group, the Alliance for Affordable Energy, says there are a number of problems with building this plant. Let's start with your concerns about cost.
Sure. Entergy's expectations or assumptions for the cost for this plant are around $6 and some cents, right? This is what they've been reporting.
That's $6 and some cents a month.
That's right. A month per resident per bill. Right. So Louisiana and New Orleans as a part of that has some of the highest energy usage in the country. It is true that for a long time we've had some of the lower energy rates per kilowatt hour. But because we have such high energy usage and much of that is waste because we haven't had energy efficiency programs for a very long time, it means that people have really high bills. And as a function of having low incomes, right, we all know that New Orleans has a real problem with poverty in general. You add on top of that a high electricity bill, and what you get is an energy burden. And a lot of folks in this town are dealing with 20 to 25% of their income going directly to energy bills. And that's not including things like gas. That's just your energy bill. And so thinking about what that means in terms of housing, in terms of livelihood and how we keep our heads above water, that's just not sustainable. And so adding something else on top of that that is going to be very risky in the long term gives us an even greater burden for our residents.
Entergy says New Orleans needs this plant because right now the city isn't generating any of its own power and it instead relies on transmission from plants miles away. But your group says New Orleans doesn't need this plant because the city has a power transmission issue and not a power generation issue. What do you mean by that?
Okay. Entergy says, as you noted, that we get our power from miles away. In fact, we get our power from 1 mile away. And it's sort of confusing because it's called 9 Mile. It's a power plant that's actually just across the Mississippi River in Marrero. And if you are uptown, it's about a mile from your home. It's actually very close. The concern about transmission is related to a specific kind of problem with a transmission line that requires upgrading and modernization. Unfortunately, Entergy New Orleans has not been willing to look at and fully consider these transmission alternatives that would allow us to access that surplus of energy that's in the market.
So what other solutions besides fixing the transmission lines or upgrading the transmission lines does your group propose?
Sure. This is actually, it goes back to one of the very first things that you said, which is Entergy is saying we need this as all of our energy needs are growing. What we know is that around the country, not just in New Orleans, but here as well, for the first time in 100 years, instead of year over year enormous growth in our energy needs and energy demands, energy needs are flatlining and declining as a result of people getting better usage out of every kilowatt hour. Programs like the Energy Smart program that is a program of the New Orleans City Council and administered by Entergy has helped people save thousands of dollars over the years, in actually millions of dollars and thousands of kilowatt hours. And so what we're suggesting is that New Orleans needs to move forward with this energy saving technology and techniques that have some of them have been around for decades, right? There is enormous benefit in actually investing in energy efficiency and reducing energy waste.
So the other big concern Entergy says is when it comes to powerful storms. They say this plant has black start capabilities. Basically, if the city loses power, this plant could potentially jumpstart the city's power grid and provide electricity after that storm hits. But your group has expressed some skepticism as to whether the plant can actually do that.
That's right. We express skepticism related to looking at history. There had been a power plant, a natural gas power plant, in that location in New Orleans East, actually for almost 60 years. It was originally built in the 50s. However, in major storms, that power plant was shut down ahead of storms. And that power plant was not a solution for us in some of our more recent and larger storms. As a matter of fact, the power that we received that helped us ride through those storms came directly across the Mississippi River from 9 Mile, from Little Gypsy, from Waterford, and from power plants in our area. And so suggesting that a new power plant in the same location would serve us differently, it feels really foolhardy. The kind of storm that they're modeling or that they're suggesting that would put us in such a situation would take out all seven of the transmission lines that currently serve the city. If all seven transmission lines went out, why do we have any reason to believe that all of the distribution lines that are already fragile and go down on a sunny day would stay up? And more than that, why would a power plant in a floodplain be more resilient than the transmission lines and the distribution lines? We just don't see that that's a fact.
Logan Burke, thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much. It's been really great.
Logan Burke is executive director of the Alliance for Affordable Energy, which opposes the building of the new gas-fired plant in New Orleans East. WWNO reached out to Entergy New Orleans, but the company declined our request to take part in this conversation. The New Orleans City Council plans to hold its final vote on this matter at its March 8th meeting. I'm Jess Clark.
For transparency, we must note that Entergy Corporation is a financial supporter of WWNO. The city's $40 million security plan is underway, and by now you've probably noticed some new cameras in your neighborhood, marked by blue and red flashing lights. This month, The Listening Post talks with New Orleanians about their thoughts on surveillance.
Welcome to The Listening Post. I'm your host, Claudia Lopez.
And I'm Natalie Yar.
Me personally, it doesn't really make a difference. I definitely don't feel any safer, but I know that there are lots of people in the city, lots of community members who it definitely will make less safe, not just feel less safe, but it will materially make them less safe.
That's Haley S., who we met at the Smash Surveillance Fiesta, a protest hosted by the Congress of Day Laborers and a number of other social groups in New Orleans. They gathered to voice their concerns on the new $40 million security plan that is going to be implemented in New Orleans. That brings us to our topic. New Orleans is facing a major change. But before we get into the questions that we asked, Natalie is going to state what we know about the plan thus far.
One new element is that there are surveillance cameras. You've probably noticed them because they are marked with red and blue flashing lights. And these cameras are video cameras that are sending feed 24/7 to a command center, what's called the Real-Time Crime Monitoring Center, where members of the NOPD are monitoring this footage. This feed can be shared with the FBI and immigration enforcement and other federal authorities, which has made some people more nervous.
Right. And that brings us to our questions for this month.
This month, we asked, what's a place you go to or pass by often where you've noticed a new camera? Do more cameras make you feel more or even less safe? Or how does the camera change how you act? Here are some key things that stuck out. Whether people mentioned the privacy of New Orleans citizens, the way our city government decided to spend this amount of money, or even the conversation of racial profiling and the criminalization of people of color in our community. One person in particular mentioned, I can't say for sure. It's a toss-up between feeling safe and having your privacy invaded. It's a very odd feeling. Then the other that brought some humor into the conversation where it said, let God be the camera and let us come back to the understanding that it is our God that knows everything. What made me really enjoy this one was because all the way at the end of this long paragraph, we get the comment there. You can save 40 million tax dollars and use it for the good of people. Natalie, what are some responses that you enjoyed?
Well, one thing that I noticed was that a number of people were confused between these cameras and the traffic cameras. People said, are these different than the speeding cameras? Or perhaps people will stop driving like jackasses. And people talked about having received tickets from these cameras. So we clarified with folks that these are different from the traffic cameras. The traffic cameras are triggered by specific things, a person driving a certain speed or by a person running a red light, and they're not filming all the time. These new cameras are different. They are filming whatever is within their sight, meaning they are being observed by police. They're not specifically tied to a ticketing mechanism, but some people are more worried about them because they don't fully understand. Really, no one yet totally understands what exactly it is that the police are doing with this data.
And that can bring an uneasy feeling. But just like any other month, we decided to reach out to one of our text message responders to dig a little deeper into the response that they sent us.
I got to sit down with Nick Janish, and he'd actually done some research on surveillance himself, and here's what he had to say.
London is one of the most surveilled cities in the world, and there's a lot of conflicting reports, but in general, it seems like they haven't seen the crime reduction that some other cities have seen. And then there's a recent study that looks at cities across the U.S. Overall, across the whole country, there's been a dip in crime over 30 years, but the states that took a sort of hard on crime approach, they haven't seen as much of a reduction in crimes.
So Nick went on to say that he felt like if there was not the evidence to show that the surveillance plan was going to have the major effects we're hoping for, that he felt like the money should just be focused instead on services for the community and especially for young people, that would likely have a much bigger impact on the community.
So while Nick brought up a valid point of whether or not this plan will work or whether or not we'll see the progress in the city that we'd like to see,
we spoke to more people at the Smash Surveillance Fiesta who voiced the concern of the possibility that our new security plan could be used as a divisive tool for families and communities of color.
I spoke with a man named Mario, and Mario has an interesting take on the policy because he actually worked in law enforcement back in Honduras.
La seguridad es muy importante. Los índices de criminalidad en New Orleans han crecido. Pero nosotros no estamos pidiendo en realidad que no haya seguridad. Estamos pidiendo un trato imparcial, un trato que sea justo. Políticas bien definidas, que no va a afectar a la minoría, que no va a afectar y no va a desestabilizar familias, padres de familia, niños. Ese es el punto.
So Mario is one of many who are concerned about the information from these cameras being potentially shared with federal immigration authorities. And he says, we understand security is actually very important. We know that crime in New Orleans is still high. And we're just looking for a plan that's impartial, that's just, that's well-defined, and a plan that's not going to affect minorities or destabilize families and parents of families.
Now, Mario wasn't the only person who brought this topic up in our conversation. We actually have a montage that brings a plethora of responses, so we're going to play that for you.
I work with an organization called Ubuntu Village, and we actually have been campaigning against the security plan for several months now, so I've known about it. But I don't believe that the city council or Mayor Landrieu provided enough forums to get feedback and meaningfully incorporate that feedback before they just went ahead and implemented the plan.
Violent crimes are still happening, and it's after the fact. You know, it's after the fact. And what people are saying that, why would you put up a surveillance when we need jobs and housing in our community? So people are living in fear right now. It's not a good thing.
They make me feel safe because this city we live in, I mean, guys just doing whatever they want to. It's a reckless city right now.
I think that they're a step in the right direction. I wish they were in a more high crime areas instead of just on like major intersections. I don't really feel like the bad boys are hanging out on the corner of Carrollton and Canal, but.
You know, Deborah Cotton lost her life despite the cameras. Cameras don't do crap.
This feels like an excuse for the cops to not be around even more. I feel like they're the cleanup crew. They have no presence now, and now they have even less of a presence just because cameras around doesn't make me feel any safer.
Well, that's all the time that we have for this month. Natalie, what's a way that people can keep in touch with us?
People can sign up to receive our text messages by texting hello to 504-303-4348.
And if you're looking for a way to follow us on social media, we can be found at LP_NOLA. And of course, the home of all our text message responses and even social media posts is listeningpostnola.com. Thanks, guys.
Good morning, evening, friends.
And now we turn the lens on to local filmmakers. 5 years ago, director and educator Lily Kieber released a documentary about James Booker called Bayou Maharaja. Since then, she's collaborated with Preservation Hall, The Arcade Fire, and Beyonce, and she has plenty of other projects in the works. NOLA V's David Benedetto spoke with Lily to hear more.
How are you doing today, Lily?
I'm awesome. Thank you so much for having me today.
5 years removed from Bayou Maharaja being released, how does that feel to have that out in the world, and what's kind of your relationship with that now?
I mean, it's been great. It took so long to finish Bahia Mirage and then to get it released out in the world that it's been nice to see the life that it has beyond that. I've always said that musicians and music-oriented people see such a different film, you know, because James Booker's story is not just about James Booker himself, but it's very much about New Orleans and about being a creative person in a capitalist society, about sort of the nature of genius, about the way that, you know, we value ourselves and our artistic output. So it's been nice to see sort of the different interpretations people have of that film. You know, it's on Netflix, so people not from New Orleans get to see it, and they still contact me and will say, like, how impactful that film has been, and that's been really cool.
You are working on another feature right now, Buck Jumping, right? Dealing with New Orleans dance culture. How did you land on that topic, and what's that process kind of been like for you?
Yeah, Buck Jumping is about dance in New Orleans, but it's also about spirituality. It's about New Orleanians. It's about how culture and tradition are transmitted here. You know, so it's sort of like starting with dance, but going beyond that. And I got interested in it just being in New Orleans. You know, like, I feel like anyone who's been in the middle of a second line knows that feeling, and you know intrinsically that this doesn't happen anywhere else and it can't happen anywhere else.
Tell me a little bit about, obviously, with the James Booker doc and some of the other things that you've worked on, very New Orleans-centric or in the regional-centric, how did you kind of dive into that discussion and how you represented this dance, which is very intrinsic to the place?
It's definitely very important to me as a filmmaker, as a media maker, as someone not from here, as someone who has the responsibility of representing other people's image, like on film, it's important to me to make sure that I'm doing that right. So for one, I have a belief that if I'm going to make a film, if I'm going to tell someone's story, the first step is going and listening to their story, you know, and like listening with ears open, not just listening to like, what can I pilfer from this to make a, you know, like a sexy, sellable film. It's always like, what is going on here on a deeper level, on a spiritual level, on a community level? And so I feel like that's always the first step in filmmaking, is to listen a lot first. And then I try to work with the people I film to develop what sort of story they want to tell. I've seen so many shows come in and already have that image in mind of what they want to tell. That doesn't feel right to me. You know, it's like if you're coming in with this like storybook idea of what you're filming versus going firsthand and learning that. You know, so in a way, by the time we come up and like show up with a camera, the people we're filming are directing that, you know, and we're just filming it,
yeah.
Which I think is a different dynamic. But I feel like it just makes pieces of work that the people who are represented feel much more tied to.
As we're kind of wrapping up the interview, I'm wondering if you have any upcoming events dealing with the new film?
Yeah, so Buck Jumping, we're currently submitting to film festivals and anticipate that it'll come out later in 2018. And as we finish that up, I'm going to have one public fundraiser, a Kickstarter. I've managed to make the whole film without that. But now as we get to the final, we're going to need a little fundraising, and I think I'm going to try to do some live events as well so that people can maybe come see some clips of it before it's actually released.
That's awesome. And for listeners that are interested in that, where can they find out more about you and that project?
For sure. My website is lilykieber.com or buckjumping.com.
Thanks so much for joining me today.
Thank you for having me.
That was filmmaker and educator Lily Kieber. In New Orleans, I'm David Benedetto.
And that's it for this week's edition of All Things New Orleans. I'm Janae Pierre. Visit our website to check out previous shows and be sure to catch us next week right here on 89.9 WWNO New Orleans and 90.5 KTLN Thibodaux Houma. Thanks for joining us.